Chapter 62. The Bribe. Not on the same night he had intended, but the next morning, the Count of Monte Cristo went out by the Barrière d'Enfer, taking the road to Orléans. Leaving the village of Linas, without stopping at the telegraph, which, at the moment the Count passed, threw out its long, bony arms, he reached the tower of Montlhéry, situated, as everyone knows, upon the highest point of the plain of that name. At the foot of the hill the Count dismounted, and began to ascend the mountain by a little winding path about 18 inches wide. When he reached the summit, he found himself stopped by a hedge, upon which green fruit had succeeded to red and white flowers. Monte Cristo looked for the door of the enclosure, and was not long in finding it. It was a little wooden gate, working on willow hinges, and fastened with a nail and string. The Count soon understood its mechanism, and the door opened. He then found himself in a little garden, about 20 feet long by 12 wide, bounded on one side by part of the hedge in which was formed the ingenious machine we have named a door, and on the other by the old tower, covered with ivy and studded with wild flowers. No one would have thought to have seen it thus wrinkled and yet adorned, like an old lady whose grandchildren come to greet her on her birthday, that it could have related some terrible scenes, if it could have added a voice to the menacing ears which an old proverb awards to walls. The garden was crossed by a path of red gravel, edged by a border of thick box of many years' growth, and of a tone and colour that would have delighted the heart of Delacroix, our modern Rubens. This path was formed in the shape of the figure 8, thus, in its windings, making a walk of 60 feet in a garden of only 20. Never had Flora, the fresh and smiling goddess of gardeners, been honoured with a purer or more minute worship than that which was paid to her in this little enclosure. In fact, of the 20 rose trees which formed the parterre, not one bore the mark of the fly, nor were there to be seen any of those clusters of green insects which destroy plants growing in a damp soil. And yet it was not because the damp had been excluded from the garden. The earth, black as soot, the thick foliage of the trees, told it was there. Besides, had natural humidity been wanting, it could have been immediately supplied by artificial means, thanks to a tank of water, sunk in one of the corners of the garden, and upon which were stationed a frog and a toad, who, from antipathy, no doubt, always remained on the two opposite sides of the basin. There was not a blade of grass to be seen in the paths, nor a weed in the flower-beds. No fine lady ever trained and watered her geraniums, her cactus and rhododendrons, with more pains than this hitherto unseen gardener bestowed upon his little enclosure. Monte Cristo stopped after having closed the door, and fastened the string to the nail, and cast a look around. "The man at the telegraph," said he, "must either engage a gardener, or devote himself passionately to agriculture." Suddenly he struck himself against something crouching behind a wheelbarrow filled with leaves. The something rose, uttering an exclamation of astonishment, and Monte Cristo found himself facing a man about 50 years old, who was plucking strawberries, which he was placing upon vine leaves. He had 12 leaves and about as many strawberries, which, on rising suddenly, he let fall from his hand. "You are gathering your crop, sir?" said Monte Cristo, smiling.
"Excuse me," replied the man, raising his hand to his cap. "I'm not up there, I know, but I've only just come down."
"Do not let me interfere with you in anything, my friend," said the Count.
"Gather your strawberries, if indeed there are any left." "I have 10 left," said the man, "for here are 11, and I had 21, 5 more than last year. But I'm not surprised. The spring has been warm this year, and strawberries require heat, sir. This is the reason that, instead of the 16 I had last year, I have this year, you see, 11 already plucked, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18. Ah, I missed 3. They were here last night, sir. I'm sure they were. I counted them. It must be the son of Mayor Simon who has stolen them. I saw him strolling about here this morning. Ah, the young rascal! Stealing in a garden! He does not know where that may lead him to."
"Certainly it is wrong," said Monte Cristo, "but you should take into consideration the youth and greediness of the delinquent."
"Of course," said the gardener, "but that does not make it the less unpleasant. But, sir, once more I beg pardon. Perhaps you are an officer that I am detaining here."
and he glanced timidly at the Count's blue coat. "Calm yourself, my friend," said the Count, with that smile which at his will became so terrible or benevolent, and which this time beamed only with the latter expression. "I am not an inspector, but a traveller, conducted here by a curiosity he half repents of, since he causes you to lose your time." "Ah, my time is not valuable," replied the man, with a melancholy smile. "Still, it belongs to government, and I ought not to waste it. But having received the signal that I might rest for an hour—" Here he glanced at the sundial, for there was everything in the enclosure of Montlhéry, even a sundial. "And having 10 minutes before me, and my strawberries being ripe, when a day longer—by the by, sir, do you think dormice eat them?" "Indeed I should think not," replied Monte Cristo. "Dormice are bad neighbours for us who do not eat them preserved, as the Romans did."
"What? Did the Romans eat them?" said the gardener. "Eat dormice?"
"I have read so in Petronius," said the Count.
"Really? They can't be nice, though they do say, as fat as a dormouse. It is not a wonder they are fat, sleeping all day and only waking to eat all night. Listen, last year I had 4 apricots. They stole one. I had 1 nectarine, only one. Well, sir, they ate half of it on the wall. A splendid nectarine. I never ate a better."
"You ate it?"
"That is to say, the half that was left, you understand. It was exquisite, sir. Ah, those gentlemen never choose the worst morsels. Like Mayor Simon's son, who has not chosen the worst strawberries. But this year," continued the horticulturalist, "I'll take care it shall not happen, even if I should be forced to sit up the whole night to watch when the strawberries are ripe."
Monte Cristo had seen enough. Every man has a devouring passion in his heart, as every fruit has its worm. That of the man at the telegraph was horticulture. He began gathering the vine leaves which screened the sun from the grapes and won the heart of the gardener.
"Did you come here, sir, to see the telegraph?"
he said.
"Yes, if it be not contrary to the rules." "Oh, no," said the gardener. "There are no orders against doing so, provided there is nothing dangerous, and that no one knows what we are saying."
"I have been told," said the Count, "that you do not always yourselves understand the signals you repeat."
"Certainly, sir, and that is what I like best," said the man, smiling.
"Why do you like that best?"
"Because then I have no responsibility. I am a machine, then, and nothing else, and so long as I work, nothing more is required of me."
"Is it possible," said Monte Cristo to himself, "that I can have met with a man that has no ambition? That would spoil my plans."
"Sir," said the gardener, glancing at the sundial, "the 10 minutes are nearly expired. I must return to my post. Will you go up with me?"
"I follow you." Monte Cristo entered the tower, which was divided into 3 stages, the lowest containing gardening implements, such as spades, rakes, watering pots, hung against the wall. This was all the furniture. The second was the usual dwelling, or rather, sleeping place of the man. It contained a few poor articles of household furniture, a bed, a table, 2 chairs, a stone pitcher, and some dry herbs hung up to the ceiling, which the Count recognised as sweet peas, and of which the good man was preserving the seeds, having labelled them with as much care as if he had been master botanist in the Jardin des Plantes. "Does it require much study to learn the art of telegraphing, sir?" asked Monte Cristo.
"The study does not take long. It was acting as a supernumerary that was so tedious."
"And what is the pay?"
1,000 francs, sir."
"It is nothing."
"No, but then we are lodged, as you perceive."
Monte Cristo looked at the room. They passed on to the 3rd stage. It was the room of the telegraph. Monte Cristo looked in turns at the 2 iron handles by which the machine was worked. "It is very interesting," he said. "But it must be very tedious for a lifetime."
"Yes. At first my neck was cramped with looking at it, but at the end of a year I became used to it. And then we have our hours of recreation and our holidays."
"Holidays?"
"Yes.
When?"
"When we have a fog."
"Ah, to be sure.
Those are indeed holidays to me. I go into the garden, I plant, I prune, I trim, I kill the insects all day long."
"How long have you been here?"
10 years, and 5 as a supernumerary make 15. You are 55 years old. How long must you have served to claim the pension?
Oh, sir, 25 years.
And how much is the pension?
100 crowns.
Poor humanity, murmured Monte Cristo. What did you say, sir? Asked the man.
I was saying it was very interesting.
What was?
All you were showing me. And you really understand none of these signals?
None at all. And have you never tried to understand them?
Never. Why should I?
But still there are some signals only addressed to you.
Certainly.
And you understand them?
They are always the same.
And they mean,
nothing new. You have an hour. Or, tomorrow.
This is simple enough, said the Count. But look, is not your correspondent putting itself in motion?
Oh, yes, thank you, sir.
And what is it saying? Anything you understand?
Yes, it asks if I am ready.
And you reply?
By the same sign, which at the same time tells my right-hand correspondent that I am ready, while it gives notice to my left-hand correspondent to prepare in his turn.
It is very ingenious, said the Count.
You will see, said the man proudly. In 5 minutes he will speak.
I have, then, 5 minutes, said Monte Cristo to himself. It is more time than I require. My dear sir, will you allow me to ask you a question?
What is it, sir?
You are fond of gardening?
Passionately.
And you would be pleased to have, instead of this terrace of 20 feet, an enclosure of 2 acres?
Sir, I should make a terrestrial paradise of it.
You live badly on your 1,000 francs.
Badly enough, but yet I do live.
Yes, but you have only a wretched garden.
True, the garden is not large.
And then, such as it is filled with dormice who eat everything.
Ah, they are my scourges.
Tell me, should you have the misfortune to turn your head while your right-hand correspondent was telegraphing?
I should not see him.
Then what would happen?
I could not repeat the signals.
And then,
not having repeated them, through negligence, I should be fined.
How much?
100 francs.
The 1/10 of your income. That would be fine work.
Ah, said the man.
Has it ever happened to you? Said Monte Cristo.
Once, sir, when I was grafting a rose tree.
Well, suppose you were to alter a signal and substitute another.
Ah, that is another case. I should be turned off and lose my pension.
300 francs?
100 crowns, yes, sir. So you see that I'm not likely to do any of these things.
Not even for 15 years' wages? Come, it is worth thinking about.
For 15,000 francs?
Yes.
Sir, you alarm me.
Nonsense.
Sir, you are tempting me.
Just so. 15,000 francs, do you understand?
Sir, let me see my right-hand correspondent.
On the contrary, do not look at him, but on this.
What is it?
What, do you not know these little papers?
Bank notes.
Exactly, there are 15 of them.
And whose are they?
Yours, if you like.
Mine? Exclaimed the man, half suffocated.
Yes, yours. Your own property.
Sir, my right-hand correspondent is signalling.
Let him.
Sir, you have distracted me. I shall be fined.
That will cost you 100 francs. You see, it is your interest to take my bank notes.
Sir, my right-hand correspondent redoubles his signals. He is impatient.
Never mind. Take these. And the Count placed the packet in the hands of the man. Now this is not all, he said. You cannot live upon your 15,000 francs.
I shall still have my place.
No, you will lose it, for you are going to alter the sign of your correspondent.
Oh, sir, what are you proposing?
A jest.
Sir, unless you force me,
I think I can effectually force you. And Monte Cristo drew another packet from his pocket. Here are 10,000 more francs, he said. With the 15,000 already in your pocket, they will make 25,000. With 5,000 you can buy a pretty little house with 2 acres of land. The remaining 20,000 will bring you in 1,000 francs a year.
A garden with 2 acres of land?
And 1,000 francs a year.
Oh, heavens!
Come, take them. And Monte Cristo forced the bank notes into his hand.
What am I to do?
Nothing very difficult.
But what is it?
To repeat these signs. Monte Cristo took a paper from his pocket, upon which were drawn 3 signs, with numbers to indicate the order in which they were to be worked. There, you see, it will not take long.
Yes, but...
Do this, and you will have nectarines and all the rest. The mark was hit.
red with fever, while the large drops fell from his brow, the man executed, one after the other, the three signs given by the Count, notwithstanding the frightful contortions of the right-hand correspondent, who, not understanding the change, began to think the gardener had become mad. As to the left-hand one, he conscientiously repeated the same signals, which were definitely carried to the Minister of the Interior. "Now you are rich," said Monte Cristo. "Yes," replied the man. "But what a price!" "Listen, friend," said Monte Cristo. "I do not wish to cause you any remorse. Believe me, then, when I swear to you that you have wronged no man, but, on the contrary, have benefited mankind." The man looked at the banknotes, felt them, counted them. He turned pale, then red, then rushed into his room to drink a glass of water, but he had not time to reach the water-jug and fainted in the midst of his dried herbs. 5 minutes after, the new telegraph reached the minister. Debray had the horses put to his carriage and drove to Danglars.
"Has your husband any Spanish bonds?" he asked of the baroness.
"I think so, indeed. He has 6 millions worth."
"You must sell them at whatever price."
"Why?"
"Because Don Carlos has fled from Borgia and has returned to Spain."
"How do you know?"
Debray shrugged his shoulders.
"The idea of asking how I hear the news," he said.
The baroness did not wait for a repetition. She ran to her husband, who immediately hastened to his agent and ordered him to sell at any price. When it was seen that Danglars sold, the Spanish funds fell directly. Danglars lost 500,000 francs, but he rid himself of all his Spanish shares. The same evening the following was read in Le Messager. "Telegraphic dispatch. The King Don Carlos has escaped the vigilance exercised over him at Borgia, and has returned to Spain by the Catalonian frontier. Barcelona has risen in his favour." All that evening nothing was spoken of but the foresight of Danglars, who had sold his shares, and of the luck of the stock-jobber, who only lost 500,000 francs by such a blow. Those who had kept their shares, or bought those of Danglars, looked upon themselves as ruined, and passed a very bad night. The next morning, Le Moniteur contained the following. "It was without any foundation that Le Messager yesterday announced the flight of Don Carlos and the revolt of Barcelona. The King, Don Carlos, has not left Borgia, and the peninsula is in the enjoyment of profound peace. A telegraphic signal, improbably intercepted owing to the fog, was the cause of this error." The funds rose 1% higher than before they had fallen. This, reckoning his loss and what he had missed gaining, made the difference of 1 million to Danglars. "Good," said Monte Cristo to Morel, who was at his house when the news arrived of the strange reverse of fortune of which Danglars had been the victim. "I have just made a discovery for 25,000 francs, for which I would have paid 100,000.
"What have you discovered?" asked Morel.
"I have just discovered the method of ridding a gardener of the dormice that eat his peaches."